Good morning and welcome to Manzanita Voices. I'm your host, Linda Field. If you love the written word, you're going to like this show because this is where we talk to writers and find out what they're doing and how they do it. Pull up a comfortable chair and get set for an hour of good listening. We're sponsored by the Calaveras County Arts Council and Manzanita Writers Press. Our goal is to provide literary services for the public and develop the literary arts in Calaveras County, California, and way beyond. We have listeners in Arizona, New York, Virginia, and Wisconsin, and the word is spreading. But I want this show to be heard in even more places, so this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to send a free autographed copy of our anthology, Wild Edges, to the first person from a new state who contacts me and tells me who my guest is today and what book she has written. All you have to do is email me at writers@kvgcradio.com. Wild Edges is a beautiful book, and I think you'll be really happy to get it. So if you're in a state that I haven't already mentioned, Arizona, New York, Virginia, or Wisconsin, because those people all have a book already. One listener from each place. If you're in a different state, send that email to me and mention my guest and the name of her book and include your mailing address, and a copy of Wild Edges will be on its way to you. Now it's time for the morning workout. This is where I read something sent in by you. It can be poetry or prose. 2 minutes or less, and you should remember to embed it in an email to me here at the station. That's so I don't have to open any attachments. Again, the way to contact me always is writers@kvgcradio.com. So send your work to me, cut and paste it, put it in the body of the email message. Give me your contact information, too, maybe your phone number, so if I have a question or something, I can contact you. If you want to be anonymous, tell me, and I won't read your name on the air. Today, our morning workout is from a California writer, William Keener. He wrote a poem called For a Wedding at Tahoe. Late July and warm days in the high Sierra bring us snowmelt with a trace of gold. Down steep canyons ringed with pines, the riches of one season give to the next. We witness mountains gathering waters in their granite hands, holding what they can, and now the promise in this valley where two streams join, pouring waters into something deeper than each of them alone. Still and clear, the lake they make of their lives. For a Wedding at Tahoe, William Keener. Thank you for sending that in. My guest today is really special to me because she's the reason I'm here talking to you. Zoe Keithley is my writing guru. I had always wanted to write, but until I started taking her workshop in Sacramento, I never did anything about it. When I found Zoe's Story Workshop Writer's Circle in Sacramento, I realized that there were other really very real people just like me who were already busy working on developing their skills. And Zoe not only got me started writing, she got me reading out loud in front of strangers. Oh my gosh, that was really scary at first. But look where it got me. I'm here on this show now. 4 times a year, Zoe's group reads for the public at Luna's Cafe, a sort of a cute little old bohemian place, really cozy spot in Sacramento, downtown on 16th Street, within sight of the state capitol building. We're going to hear all about reading at Luna's and the story workshop and a whole lot more. So let's bring her on. Zoe Keithley, welcome.
Thank you, Linda.
It's really a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
I know a lot about you, but some of my listeners don't. So let's see, where shall we begin? You have such a fabulous history of education and teaching and writing and being published and experience. Where are you from, first of all, and where did you go to school?
Well, I'm a born and bred Chicagoan.
Oh.
And I did primarily the route through Catholic schools in Chicago and just outside of Chicago, and even to college. I went to Trinity College in Washington, D.C., which is Nancy Pelosi's college, by the way.
Oh, okay.
And I think that education helped me quite a bit in terms of, or maybe I was just lucky, because it seemed to emphasize the things that I wanted to learn how to do and that I was interested in. We memorized poetry. We read literature, talked about it. And the arts in every way were respected and honored in that education that I had, so that it wasn't such a far-fetched idea when I thought, well, this is even before I went to school when I was four, and my mother had started reading the Honey Bunch books to me, that I had stories that I would like to tell, too, and I would like to try to do that. So it took me a long time to get there, but I'm so happy now that I am here. And I owe really my ability to finally dedicate myself to writing to this program in Chicago at Columbia College called Story Workshop, which was developed by John Schultz in the 60s. There was a big arts renaissance in the 60s in Chicago, and John was a part of that. But this is an approach to writing that he claims came to him as an inspiration one day. It just started pouring through his head, and he grabbed a pad and paper, and he started writing, and he wrote all day long. And when he was finished, he had the central core of it. Oh. And since then has built it into a fabulous program. And I stumbled into it by accident and never left until I had a master's degree in it myself and had experience teaching it.
Wow, that's really something. Well, that's the method that you use.
Yes.
In
mm-hmm.
the Story Workshop Writers Circle.
That's
and,
right.
And I find that it helps me so much. It's kind of magic.
Well, it is magic, but it leans on the magic that's inside each person. It leans on these basic principles that and facts that we, first of all, that when we're thinking, we're seeing in our minds. And so the thinking is visual as well as, in words. We see, we remember a Thanksgiving when our mother dropped the turkey just before she had to bring it out to the guests, but fortunately the kitchen door was closed. And when her husband called, "Can I help you, dear?" she said, "No, no, everything is fine." We remember, we can see the whole thing. Again, we can see the kitchen, we can see what was on the stove, we can probably see what she was wearing or what type of thing she was wearing. We can hear the sounds again, just as if they were happening right now. And that is that ability, which everybody has, is what the Story Workshop leans on. It leans on the abilities that we are born with and that we're using every day when we do any kind of communicating with each other. So those things happen in our minds before we speak. Before I tell you a story, I'm already beginning to see what it is I'm going to tell you about. And I'm seeing it clearly so that you can see it too.
That's right. So the exercises that we do in the workshop, we sit around in a circle, all evenly spaced. It's very precise the way our chairs have to be spaced from each other and everything. And so we can all see each other, but we do these exercises that kind of open our minds and get us to see with our minds other things that are not there in the room with us. We rely on memory, we rely on imagination, mm-hmm. we rely on whatever comes up from our psyche.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the wonderful thing that I discovered as a student at Columbia College when I was taking story workshop classes was that these abilities that I already had under the continual practice of going to a four-hour workshop once a week, they extended themselves enormously and very steadily until after I had been in classes there 4 or 5 years, I was leaps and bounds ahead of where I had been before. And it just spills out on the paper then, because you're functioning so richly from inside that it kind of presses out of you onto the page. And it's I love it because Story Workshop puts you in a position to experience your own authority. The fact that you have these abilities, they're your abilities, and you are using them, and you are making the choices of how you use them. And I think this is something that one reason why I wanted to take it into the city schools in Chicago and show the teachers how to do this, because you develop not pride, but genuine self-esteem. Huh. You know that you have power and you have a unique voice that no one else has, and that you see things in a way that no one else does. And this becomes very obvious in the workshops, and you begin to get extremely excited and invested in what other people are going to be bringing up and telling.
I know that this would be really helpful. If I had had something like this, if a teacher had used this method for me when I was in grade school, first writing, it would have given me a foundation and a kind of a roadmap. Usually a teacher says, okay, I want you to write a composition, a 100-word composition about roller skates. And the poor kid is just sitting there saying, oh my goodness, I don't know what to say. And they're so afraid, they have nothing to work with except the idea that they're supposed to write about roller skates. Mm-hmm. They don't know where to begin. Mm-hmm. But the Story Workshop method gives them a platform and gives them ideas and opens up their imagination. We'll be right back with Zoe to talk more about this. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Manzanita Voices. This is Linda Field, and today we're talking with Zoe Keithley from Sacramento. Before we talk more with Zoe, though, I do want to remind you about our website, which is www.manzapress.com, to learn all about everything that Manzanita Writers Press is doing. Eventually, our shows are going to be archived on that website, too, so you'll be able to go and listen to not just this show, but all of our shows. Also, please check out the Calaveras County Arts Council that does sponsor us. They always have wonderful activities and things going on throughout the year, and their website is www.calaverasarts.org. That's Calaveras arts.org. One more thing, Manzanita Writers Press is running a contest. We'd like your entry for our wine and cheese anthology, Wine, Cheese, and Chocolates. The deadline is December 31st, and we're looking for poetry, prose, art, and photography. The entry fee is $10, and you can learn more about that at our Manza Press.com website. Okay, back to Zoe. We were talking about the Story Workshop Writer's Circle, and you had a few more things you wanted to mention about it, Zoe, and we were talking about children learning in school.
Oh, right. You were saying that you had not, you were saying to me in between here that you, when you were getting your training as a teacher, because you did some teaching in the schools, that you didn't get any training in writing, in teaching writing.
That's right. They didn't teach us how to teach really anything, I don't think. They always said, motivate, 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 but they didn't really help us learn to do that.
And I think for a long time people think if you can talk, you can write, and there is truth in that.
Mm-hmm.
If you you can write if you can talk. If you can talk on the paper to somebody. Talking to nobody tends to drain the writing of anything that would be naturally lively in your own voice because you're not imaging. We image in part when we're talking because we want the other person to see it, and we have to see it first. And this is a basic principle with all writing and with all art, you know, that you need to see it in your own mind. And it's that seeing that actually, and the fact that there's an audience there that pulls on you, the audience is a draw for you to heighten the seeing and get it out to them in a way that they're going to be able to receive it. And this is one reason that we do the four public readings a year at Art Luna's. If you don't know Art Luna's place in Sacramento, you're in for a treat. Please come on by, either for one of our programs or one of the many other programs. He has some rocking poetry going on there every Thursday night as well. He's been a patron of the arts in Sacramento and really put his money where his mouth is and his elbow grease where his mouth is in order to help the arts for over 25 years. So,
yeah, this is Luna's Cafe.
That's
at
right.
1616 16th Street at 16th and O.
Correct, that's correct.
Right in the site of, if you look down the street, you'll see the State Capitol building, California State Capitol. And it's a cute little place. Serves Mexican food
kind
and beverages.
Kind of a little 60s place.
Yeah.
You have the extra pleasure of being able to have a little something to eat or drink while you're there during the program they're putting on. One reason that I contacted Art was because I was taught at Columbia about how important it was to do live readings to a live audience. Mm-hmm. For the writer gets an entirely different level of personal feedback, not just from the audience, but from themselves in reading to a live audience. Something else wakes up in your mind, another level wakes up, and you hear the writing that you're giving, that you've written and that you're giving aloud now. You hear it at a different level, and it's very, very helpful to developing the writing. So, of course, being the mean teacher, I insisted that everybody in the workshop come out and do some public readings. And we all had our knees knocking, me included, but now we're pretty seasoned at it. It makes a wonderful evening. We'd love to have you come out on. It's the four times a year, the third, always on the third Saturday of that month. So we had one, when did we have the last one?
January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August, September. Is that right? April,
yeah.
August?
Mm-hmm. The next one will be in November.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right around Thanksgiving time, but it will not coincide with the Thanksgiving weekend.
All right.
So we'd love to have you come by, and you can always, and Art Luna, L-U-N-A, also has a website that you can look up other things that are going on at his place.
Do you know his website?
No, but I think if you go to
Google
Art Luna and Google Art Luna,
okay.
Sacramento.
And also, what's your email address, Zoe, so that people can contact you?
Oh, yes. I would love to have anybody who's interested in watching a story workshop session.
Or coming to your story workshop session.
Exactly. You can. The first one is free of charge, and the second, and after that, if you want to keep coming, there's price negotiations go on, depending on what your situation is. If you're interested, my email is zkeithley, K-E-I-T-H-L-E-Y, @gmail.com.
And you're going to have a website pretty soon.
I am. I hope to have a website up in about perhaps 3 weeks or so, and I'm going to be putting some of my work up on it and some work from my students and other people who are in the workshop and other good writers that I know of that the general public may not have heard of yet. So come on by. I think it'll be up in about 3 weeks or so.
That'll be great. Yeah, I'm looking forward to your website.
And that will be zoekeithley.com.
Oh, okay. Again, zoekeithley.com.
Correct.
www, of course.
Right.
When can we stop saying all those W's, I wonder? Or
I don't know.
Can we? Somebody told me we don't even need to put them in now. I'm going to have to find out about that. Should be a foregone conclusion by now. We were talking during the break about other ways that people can get practice reading their work. And one thing that you did when you were younger was that you went to a home for the blind and you read to them.
I did.
And we were also talking about the there's so many ways that you can do this. You can call up an assisted living place and speak to the manager and offer to come in, maybe with another friend or two who is also a writer, and come in some afternoon and read to the people.
Right. I read once a week there for a year.
That's great.
And I got the great value of I had finished my first novel, and I wanted to hear it out loud, and I knew it would be better with an audience. And I also thought that because I tend to be a pretty highly visual, you know, in my writing and in the kind of language that I use, that might suit people who are blind because they see in their minds.
And that's so, right. And you're very descriptive.
So they seem to like it quite a bit.
Now, Zoe, you've won several awards.
A few. Mm-hmm.
You were nominated for a Pushcart Prize.
Mm-hmm.
You won the Tallgrass Prize from the Tallgrass Writers Guild. And is that the one? There was this title that I just think is so beautiful. It brings tears to my eyes just hearing the title, which is Feather Their Wings Softly.
That's right.
Is that what you won the prize for with Tallgrass?
It is. It's actually a longer short story, and I submitted because they had a page limit. As if you send your work out to contests, which I hope you do, often there's a page limit, and they had a page limit for this contest. So I excerpted it from the longer short story.
And it still worked as an excerpt? And
well, they thought it did because they gave me a prize.
So what was the story about?
Well, this is a story about, it's a story, as I think most stories are on several levels. This is a story of a woman who is out from Florida. She's a retired teacher. And she's in her 60s, and she's out visiting her son, who is a student at the veterinarian school at Davis.
Hmm.
And the problem with coming to visit her son at Davis is that then she has to see her sister Carmela, whom she can't stand, who lives in, I think she lives in Auburn in this story. And so part of it is the fact that Carmela just is very different from her, and she likes everything that this woman doesn't like. She's kind of noisy. She's kind of showy. She's got flashy clothes, but which the storyteller feels are in bad taste herself. And this particular visit, her sister says, I have got the permission to use a friend of mine's cabin up in the Sierras, and I would love you to see the mountains. And some of my friends are going to come up, and we're going to play poker up there. Well, of course, this woman doesn't care for poker at all. She doesn't play cards, but she says, well, what can she say? Oh, yes.
She can't get out of it.
I'll go. So,
okay.
So she goes, and it tends to be very noisy. Her sister's friends are very noisy. They're drinking a lot of beer, and they're eating a lot of chocolate at the same time. And she feels stifled and smoking heavily, and she feels stifled in the place, so she decides she'll just go out for a walk. And so she takes a little money with her and stops at one little store and buys a candy bar, and then she just goes down a trail, and she tells herself, well, she won't get lost if she just stays on one trail. You know, then all she has to do is turn around and follow it back. So she does that for quite a while, but she gets deeper into the Sierras, away from the cabins and everything, and she gets entranced with, there's some snow falling, and she gets entranced with this fabulous display of trees covered with snow, and the snow just pouring down out of the sky and everything.
And of course, she's not familiar with California Sierra snows.
No.
Has she heard of the Donner Party?
That's I don't know. but anyway, I could read a little bit if you
okay.
like.
Okay, love it. Yeah.
So she looks up. And the diamonded sky reverberated. One. From the center of the earth, the word rebounded, familiar as her bones, as the very core of her bones. One. She flung her arms to surrender to the heavens, rocking on her frozen feet, her mouth agape to let the swollen ecstasy escape. When at last the torrent diminished, she wiped away tears with the palm of her hand and dried it stinging on the inside of her pocket. With her body buzzing like a room just emptied, she stood blinking. What direction had she been facing when she stopped to get her bearings from the stars? I guess she's looking at stars. It's gotten dark.
Oh, okay.
It's been a while since I looked at this. On either side were meadows that could have been photo negatives of one another. Fear crowded her throat. Which way to Pleasant Vista, to her sister's friend's vacation cabin? With all her turning, she had lost her direction. She flapped her arms in disbelief, in despair, and let out a long, heartbroken sound that wobbled away toward the treetops. How could she have done this to herself? She bent over, her head nearly at her knees, sobbing convulsively. She didn't know which way to turn. What should she do now?
Wow, what a situation. I won't ask how it turns out.
Okay.
But I see this is in a book. What book is this in, Zoe?
This is a book edited by, published in the Midwest by the Outrider Press in Dyer, Indiana. And this one is called Vacations. The press figures out a theme every year, and they have a competition. And this one was Vacations, the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Oh, okay. Well, perhaps people could get that book and find out what happens
to
this
woman. I think if they're interested, they could look up Outrider Press on Incorporated, and Whitney Scott is the editor. And I'm sure she would have some to sell if somebody
Great.
Wanted one.
What year did that book come out?
I think this is in, like, 1990.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to go to break, and then we'll be back with Zoe Keithley in just a moment. Please stay tuned. Welcome back to Manzanita Voices. This is Linda Field, and we're visiting with Zoe Keithley, who came from Sacramento today to talk with us. And Zoe, you have recently published a book of poetry. Was it last year that it came out?
No, in 09.
09?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's called Crow Song. And remember, folks, I am looking for someone. I want to hear from somebody who lives in a state and is listening from that state where I haven't heard from you yet. I already have heard from people in Arizona, New York State, Virginia, and Wisconsin, but I want to hear from you, especially if you're in another state. And if you contact me and tell me the name of my guest today, which is Zoe Keithley, and the name of the book that she wrote, which is Crow Song, I will send you an autographed copy of Manzanita Writers Press Wild Edges, our poetry anthology. So go ahead, get your name into me at writers@kvgcradio.com, and maybe you'll get the book. Okay, Zoe, Crow Song, let's get to that.
Okay, this was published in 2009 by Roan Press, a new press in Sacramento, a wonderful new press. I was thrilled that he liked my manuscript well enough to work with me on it and to put a book together.
Yes, that's Brad Buchanan, right?
That's Brad Buchanan.
Yeah.
And he's a wonderful, wonderful writer, a poet himself, and has a wonderful press with his wife. They have the press together. So I gave him a big chunk of manuscript, kept my fingers crossed, and he liked it, but he wanted it structured. Now, in my day, poets didn't structure their poetry in books. You know, I'm a little older generation, and we'd call it, you know, like poems in a bag. You just put it all in a bag, you know. And the reader didn't expect to do anything but flip through and find what they liked. But Brad felt it was important for the book to have structure, and since I had this title, Crow Song, and the image of a crow, I was able to structure it in four parts. One is called Circling, and the next one is From the Nest, Scavenging, and the fourth section is The Long Iridescent Flight.
Hmm.
So maybe I would read a little bit. Would
Please
you like
do.
That?
Okay. Yes, I love this book.
All right, so this is from the first section, Circling. This poem is called Bobbing on the Bough. Bobbing on the bough, small and hard, but green with promise, the pippin is sustained. But it is not the tree that ripens its fruit. Possibility is all a tree can offer, and hope. Instead, it is the pippin's giving up of its 1,000 microscopic orifices to the heat and excitement of the sun's radiance that grows, cell by cell, the lavish tissue and blushing skin. Such a mating of heaven and earth, such surrender and permeation, creates this swell of love whose flesh we divide between us now beneath this tree, where vistas of the world spread before us. I turn from the sight of the trembling blue hills to your waiting arms. Breathe deep your perfume. Trace with my tongue the perfect scroll of your ear. What you are seeps softly into my most secret places where ecstasy wakes each membrane. It is this way you become flesh of my flesh. And daily I too ripen, lavish and fragrant, with the running juice of this holy intercourse rising in glistening beads to stand openly upon my skin.
Your poems are very sensual and, as we said before, descriptive and filled with the beauty of nature.
Here's one that you requested, Linda.
Okay.
And this is from the fourth section. In my early morning mind, I invite you to Sunday breakfast. But you must bring your own coffee. I have the milk and sugar. I set the fold-out table on the back porch so you can keep company with treetops and watch against the blue sky the tiny flag of the Edgewater Beach Apartments snap in the wind. A linen cloth for the table, a bowl of pansies, the bulging sun times, bacon and provolone for the omelet, I'm good with eggs, a little strawberry yogurt, fat baking powder biscuits, butter and honey and marmalade. What have I left out? Oh, the early June air teasing our hair. A slow rumbling bumblebee. The great tree to the right that throws high her umbrella under which we can talk, read, and spread butter on another biscuit. Your eyes stray across my neighbor's yard to rest upon her iris, daisies, and just sprouted corn. You let your hand fall softly to finger a comment onto my cat, winding through the legs of your chair. At the end, stepping from the clutter of dishes, you kiss me your thanks. It is your way, though I am already thanked, and can hardly stand, become so drunken now from the sight and smell of you so near. You wave your way down the back, and I follow your hand, the top of your head, the striking of your boot heels, then the arcing squeak of the gate. I wait while all that space washes clean again, but without you. I feel the longing dig through me as I turn in my bed and begin again. It is Sunday. I invite you to breakfast. You must bring your own coffee.
I do like that one. I can't believe that book came out in 2009. The time has gone so fast.
It has.
And we've all been working like mad on our current things. Do you have another one from Crow Song that you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, one more maybe. Well, maybe I'd like to read this one that's not from Crow Song. Would that
be
all right?
All right.
Okay. It's called Anyone Can Do It.
Okay.
You know Jesus, how he walked on water and Peter dropped his teeth? Nice trick, but not unheard of. Ordinary men, any night, walk among the stars. Rising from a neighborhood sidewalk, they invade the bottomless, boundless, deepening blue. Music of the Astros whistles in the ears, drums the cheek, plucks the sleeve. Stars burn past, above, below, and endlessly outward. There is no support, and no fear, nor wonder of accomplishment. Such things are not amazing, but simple. When you're called forth, you go.
Very interesting. Is that possibly going to be in a coming book?
That would be nice.
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
This is actually, when I was in Chicago, one of the things, another poet and I and a fellow woman musician had a little trio, and so we were two women poets and a musician and a singer. She also sang, and we did performances for about 30 years around the Chicago area.
I bet that was
poetry program,
wonderful.
Poetry and music programs. It was a lot of fun. It was really fun to put the programs together, to figure out what we were going to do and have a theme and make the music work with. She would play flute through the poetry.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes she would sing. I've written a few songs and things too. She would sometimes sing some of those songs. So,
oh, now there's something I didn't know about you. You've written some songs?
Yeah, I've written a few songs.
So. Oh, my. We'll have to hear some of those
beginning, still a beginning student on the banjo. After 15 years.
Oh, okay.
But I finally got out of G. Now I can go. I can play in double C as well.
Oh, hey, that's really great. That's progress. I bought a ukulele not long ago, thinking I'd like to try to learn the ukulele. I've had it out of its case twice since I bought it.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it is. It is fun. It's fun. Now you're working. You have two novels.
I have a completed novel I haven't been able to sell or to publish.
Oh, that's just, it will happen, of course.
Well, I insist on it, actually. And I have another one that I've completed the first draft, and I'm just finishing the second draft now. And it's very exciting to me. It's based on a story that a friend who has since passed away told me. It's set in the Middle Ages, and it was a life that he felt he lived in the Middle Ages.
Hmm.
And I just fell in love with the story, and I asked him if he would mind if I tried to tell the story as a novel, and he said no, and we agreed that I wouldn't mention his name or anything, but that I could have the story to use. So
he's a very shy person.
And not everybody believes in past lives and that kind of thing. So, and now that he's passed away, I don't have a way to ask him to, if he wants to change his mind. So, but he remembered, he had quite a few details. He had a skeleton to give me, so I was very lucky with that. And then it was my job to see everything in my mind and get it on the page, scene by scene.
And this book, I remember you went to England to do some research.
I did. I went to, it's two-thirds of it is set in Exeter in England, which and it takes place in the 1100s. In the 1100s, Exeter was the second biggest and most profitable city in England. Mm-hmm. It was a happening town in those days. And the hero comes from a very, very poor family. And so it's really a story of somebody integrating life's lessons and growing and expanding from them, because he becomes a very accomplished person by his old years. Hmm. And it has two very beautiful love stories in it. And I have a proposal scene from the first love story.
Oh, wonderful. Great. Well, when we come back from our break, we'll hear that.
Okay.
So stay tuned, folks. This is Linda Field with Zoe Keithley. You're listening to Manzanita Voices. We're back with Zoe Keithley. This is Manzanita Voices, and I'm Linda Field. And before we get back to Zoe telling us about her novel set in the Middle Ages, I just want to make sure that I tell you again about our morning workout, where I'm looking for you to send me some written work, some of your work that you'd like to have possibly read on the air. And if you don't want your name mentioned, that's fine. Just tell me you want to be anonymous. Send me 2 minutes of whatever, poetry or prose, to writers@kvgcradio.com. I know I say it kind of fast, but the call letters are, think of Voice of the Gold Country, VGC, so kvgcradio.com. Also, check out www.manzapress.com to see what Manzanita Writers Press is doing, and go there also to get your instructions for the how to submit for the Wine, Cheese, and Chocolate Anthology. Photography, poetry, art, prose, anything that has to do with wine, cheese, or chocolate. The deadline is December 31st, and we're looking for your submission. And Zoe, people might want to contact you. What's your website and your email address?
Well, the website isn't up yet, but and I hope in about 3 weeks it will be www.zoekeithley.com. My web address, if you would like to some information about workshops or about anything else, is zkeithley, K-E-I-T-H-L-E-Y, @gmail.com.
Okay, and that's where they go to find out about your story workshop writers group,
the
readings at Luna's.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so now let's get back to...
Well, just a minute first.
Yes,
before,
okay.
Before we get to the reading, I like to butt in here a little bit, and I like to say a word of appreciation as a writer for Manzanita Press, and for the work that Monica Rose does and the work that you do, Linda. This radio show is a fabulous idea, and it's a wonderful thing for writers and for people who just like writing and like to listen to fresh talent. You add a great deal to the community, and you're inspiring other people. It has ripples outward. So I've had some wonderful experiences coming to your events, the Manzanita Press events here in Calaveras County and other places. It's been a privilege to be a part of that.
Oh, thanks so much. It's been great having you come, too. I mean, you've taught workshops for us,
mm-hmm.
and you've also just been a guest,
mm-hmm.
and come and taken part in what we've offered. So
right.
That's great.
And the food is always great.
That's not so bad either. Yes, and that's one of the reasons that I wanted to do this radio program, this is a way, I guess the thing that I hope that this show does more than anything else is motivate people who are listening to get going with their writing. Join a writer's group, find a place to read to people out loud, come on out of your closet and start writing and producing. You'll feel so great. It's just a wonderful feeling. And to that end, I'm hoping to hear from someone who lives in a state and is hearing the show, lives in a state that I haven't mentioned yet. We have people listening not only in California, but New York State, Virginia, Wisconsin, and Arizona, and Phoenix, Arizona, to be specific. Some good friends down there. But if you are living in another state and I haven't mentioned it, contact me at writers@kvgcradio.com and I will send you a copy of Manzanita Writers Press's anthology, Wild Edges. Okay, Zoe, I don't want to take any more time from you. You're talking about your novel set in the Middle Ages.
This is the beginning of the the first of the two beautiful love stories. I think they're beautiful, that I was told about and I got to picture. And I'd like to say, Linda, tag on to what you said about getting people writing, that, you know, nobody has the ideas or the feelings or the sensibilities that you have. And if you don't write them, they won't get written and they won't be read. So that's a way to share who you are with your fellow human beings. So this young man now, Joe File, his name is Joe File Ballare, and he is a young blacksmith at this point and working at his uncle's blacksmith shop, and he's fallen in love with a young woman whose name is Sarah, and she has beautiful blonde hair. She's just a beautiful and a very sweethearted young woman, very shy. The two of them are very, very shy. And this is the first time that there have been the grown-ups, the older people in the family have recognized that they like each other, and this is the first time that they've been sort of sent off. They're at a festival, and they've been sent off to have a good time by themselves. The two families think that they're a likely couple, and they're encouraging this. So they're told to go ahead and go out and have some fun, you know, while you can. So they're going through the, just like we have at the festivals that we have here, there's all kinds of booze and people hawking all kinds of wares and people walking around on stilts and things like that. And they come up to one booth that where they have they're selling hair, false hair for women. They wore it in those days in the 1100s.
Oh, they did.
I didn't
realize that.
And the hawker says, "Come on now, mistress, try a new look for yourself and see if your young master there aren't enchanted." She croaked, holding out a lavish piece of black ringlets and a mirror. If I may, she pinned the ringlets to Sarah's head and arranged the fall of curls to cascade near to the end of her plait, P-L-A-I-T, where they jumped and shivered in the breeze. Sarah peered into the mirror. From behind, I saw the pale, delicate skin abloom, and eyebrows and hairline of spun gold drown in swarming black locks thick as a horse's mane. She spun to look at me with a teasing smile, but I rested my chin upon my closed fist and held myself thoughtful and formal. "Yes, it is a great hank of hair. But then how will your father recognize you?" I crumpled my brow. "He will see a maid in the dress of his Sarah, but with black hair flying like 12 crows at war, and surely would offer such an apparition a crust of bread to send it away quickly. And all the while must grieve and search the road for his Sarah with hair like the sunlight." Sarah straightened her face. "Well, sir," she shook her finger, the black curls bouncing, "you argue a strong point. And so, sent away by him, what place could I call home, then, and where rest my head? At my place," I wanted to shout, "here is the door, rest your head with me." But then, dampened, I remembered I had no place of my own yet. "Thank you, no, madam," Sarah turned and unpinned the hair, "for I see I may invite disaster should I take a fancy to such hair." She held the ringlets out to the vendor, but Perhaps someone else will choose it and so bring you good fortune. As we strolled on, Sarah shook a finger at me. I never did such things before I met you, Master Jophiel. I had best be on my knees at St. Vitalis and lighting candles for my soul, seeing how wild you make me. I held up my palms and backed away. I said nothing of wigs, mistress. I have no business with wigs. I believe it is that antic elf I have sometimes seen peer from behind your eyes looking out for games. Perhaps, Sarah tossed her head with a smile. And so they walk through the crowd. There's somebody on stilts, and there's a family of musicians. And they stop at booths, and while Sarah's at one booth, he buys a beautiful comb for her at another booth. And then when she comes over to him, he presents it. He says, "Some of us like the gold of your hair just as it is, mistress." I held it out to her. Her hands flew up in surprise. She turned the comb against her fingers and then reached back to pull the tail of her plait into her lap and pass the comb through it. "It is very fine, Jophiel. I do not have one so fine," she beamed. "I thank you." Her pleasure quieted my heart's need to give her something until we stopped where a craftsman with a bristled chin sat upon a tree stump, whittling so fast his thick thumb stuck out and spread into a blur. Sarah picked up a small wood bird cunningly carved and held it so long I was ready to buy it, but she put it back. "But does it not take your fancy? I want to buy it for you." "I have a beautiful comb," she said, with a face soft and serious, "and now there is not anything more here to take my fancy." She turned as if looking around and then back to me, shaking her head. "No, nothing more here at all. Nothing more of Lammas to that's the name of the festival, Lammas to charm my fancy." And all the while she spoke, her eyes, as if they were fingertips, traced the planes of my face. "But there is someone here who captures my fancy, and that altogether. His name is Jophiel Ballare, and that one I would choose above any other." Well, I might as well have been struck in the face by a wood plank. Her words delivered such a blow of surprise. And just then, a hollering crowd of young rowdies pounded through the booths and broke us apart. I searched across the rush of heads until I found her with her eyes still fixed upon me as she backed away to give the ruffians wider traverse. When we came together again, I caught up her hand and led her behind a stall piled high with willow baskets. I had seen in one of my friend Edward's music folios a woodcut of a love-stricken knight fallen onto his knee to his lady. Just so, overflowing with urgency and terror, and without even knowing I had done it, I fell to my knee. "My lady," I called her, "there is none in this world I prize greater than you, and none to whom I would more gladly vow my service and the strength of my body as long as my breath shall last." These were not my words, believe me, for I had none. But love poured through to speak for me, as Edward had told me, is the way with amour. The wind teased the wisps of her hair, and she looked long and deep into me. "I thank you for that, Jophiel," she said. It seemed for a moment she would say more, for she hesitated, but then bent to raise me with that hand of hers I still grasped. "Come," she said, "we'd best get back. Our families will wonder where we are." When we found our people, the comb was passed around and won approval. A light came into Mistress Dorset's eyes as she explored its cool, smooth surface, and remembering some moment of the past, she threw a quick glance at her husband, and they exchanged a smile.
This is going to be a wonderful novel. Thank you, Zoe.
Thank you.
I trust that you'll let me know when the book is published, and we'll see it on your website, and I will let the listeners know.
Okay.
I think it will be very, very good.
Well, it's fine with me if people want to pull for it to get it into print.
And we will be announcing your book launch, I hope, within what? Within the year?
Oh, that would be great.
Wouldn't that be fun?
That
well, let's aim
great.
For it. Why
yes.
not?
All right.
Nothing ventured, nothing gained.
That's right.
Zoe Keithley, it's been so nice having you with us today.
Thank you, Linda. It's been a privilege to be here.
Thank you for being my guest. Come back and see me soon.
Oh, I sure will.
Okay. And for the listeners, come back to us next week to another Manzanita Voices. Until then, have a great week and get writing.
You've been listening to Manzanita Voices, a production of the Manzanita Writers Press, an affiliate of the Calaveras County Arts Council.